Web 3.0 is the natural evolution of the internet. It's built upon the core concepts of decentralization, transparency, and utility. And while swimming in this Web3 ocean, we may discuss about DeFi, dApps, DEX, on-chain, off-chain, smart contracts, altcoins, tokenomics, DAOs, and diamond hands. But our focus will be to the central theme of Web 3.0. The Web3 Ocean Podcast is at the intersection of audio, blockchain, community, and data. I'm your host, Sashwat, and I will have candid conversations with some of the blockchain alchemists of our current times. Let's dive in. Hello, everyone. We have Bruce Spohn, the founder of Ocean Protocol, which is a decentralized data exchange protocol that unlocks data for AI. Ocean Protocol uses advanced blockchain technology that allows data to be shared and sold in a safe, secure, and transparent manner. More to come, but Bruce, welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
Thank you so much. So I'm very excited, delighted, and also it's a privilege to have you on the show and to learn so much from you. I mean, you have an amazing entrepreneurial career. You come from a great consulting background, and you've worked in so many financial institutions or banks. And then now you are in the cutting edge blockchain technology and shaping Ocean Protocol as well. So quite curious to know, I mean, how did this entrepreneurial journey take off? Like, changing gears, taking pivots, and how did you start off actually?
Well, I mean, if I'm completely honest, I had promised myself as a young child that I would never be an entrepreneur. I had watched how hard my father had worked and how difficult it was, how long the hours were and how much stress there was. And as a young child, I said, I'm going to work in a company. And I don't think I ever want to be an entrepreneur. And I went into corporate world. I went and did consulting for 5 years. And I did 5 years of consulting and I did 5 years of Mercedes. And then after that, the knowledge that I had accumulated around the world and in my experience, I knew that I had a suspicion that it could be something that we could turn into our own company. And so my co-founder and I at that time, we set up a company to build banks around the world. And it was just natural. It was entrepreneurial experience was very good. It worked out nicely. Of course, it was stressful and everything like that, but it turned out well. And now they're being acquired as we speak. And so we took it from there. And now I've done 3 or 4 different projects. And it just happened naturally.
Awesome. And I was looking into your profile, and of course, I've listened to you in multiple places as well. So you have been in this blockchain crypto space for a good amount of time. I mean, it just did not happen one fine day in 2018 or 19. It was like starting, I think you started off early 2010 onwards itself. So quite curious, you come from a consulting background. So I happen to spend quite a lot of my years in my consulting days in multiple geographies as well. So we always used to do a lot of slicing and dicing of data, finally recommending and getting on to a conclusion where that this is the business problem that we need to solve for the next 5 years, right? So why did you choose the meat of Ocean Protocol, and how did you actually arrive at that juncture to take it to the next leap forward?
So between 2008 and 2013, I had been building banks. And one of the things that had given me meaning was that I was helping to develop financial systems in countries where the financial systems were not as mature as, let's say, in Western Europe or in North America. And I saw that that was giving more choices and more access to financial services to normal people. And as I was building banks, I was also seeing how important banks were to an economy. I was starting to give lectures at various universities about the importance of money and the importance of banks. I'd read a lot of books about social justice and economic development and such like that as part of this banking setup projects that I'd been doing. Around 2010, I had heard about Bitcoin. It was on my radar. And then around 2012, 2013, we started talking about the impacts of Bitcoin and the more broader impacts of that. And that's when a book by Hernando de Soto, I think it was called Dead Capital, was talking about how you could give people title to their land that leads to an explosion of potential because people can mortgage that. They can use it as security. They can use it as a place of business. They had a certain security to raise their families. And in 2012, 2013, 2014, that's when I made a connection saying that, hey, we could use blockchain as a land registry for intellectual property. And that's when we started, Trent and Masha, our co-founders, started Ascribe for NFTs, essentially, digital art. And in 2014, we rolled that into a formal company. So that's how it started. We thought that blockchain could be used for a whole host of uses rather than just digital cash or digital gold. And we worked towards it since 2013, 2014. We're actually one of the first. I think we own the patent for the NFT.
Whoa, nice. You know, usually in the DeFi space, a lot of financial use cases people really touch upon. But, you know, DataFi, this is very unique for sure. I'm very curious that this month is where Davos is happening. And I think Ocean Protocol has a presence as well. So would love to really know, you know, like your worldview, or maybe you could touch upon a bunch of trends that's setting up in the data economy per se. Everyone is aware of the vision, the mission of the Ocean Protocol that is on the Ocean V4 coming up as well. But in line of Davos, and where one of the pointer that a lot of global leaders this year will be touching upon is, of course, future of work, working together, and the fourth industrial revolution touch points, which includes IoTs, cloud computing, edge computing, and definitely blockchain.
Yeah, so the hypothesis that we started when we pivoted into Ocean, which was pure kind of data and data services orchestration, was that blockchains allow for trusted, audited kind of provenance of data sets where AI is going to really love, because the ability to have kind of clean and pre-structured data allows for a much richer analysis and much trusted analysis. And if you could make it so that that data was available on a blockchain and then apply all the tools that were being developed on blockchain on that data, then that data right from the very start is the first class citizen. You can use DeFi on it, you can tokenize it, you can create data unions, DAOs, all that sort of stuff. A lot of the stuff we didn't know before, but we knew that having data integrated into the blockchain right from the very start would open up any of these possibilities that are going to arrive, some we don't even know. And so the trend that I see is that data has been a conversation for the last 5 or 6 years already. We didn't have the tools. With blockchain, that the tools are emerging, of which Ocean is one of them. I think that if we look purely in the crypto and blockchain space, what people have seen is the first use case, which was Bitcoin. Then you had colored coins and all the clones of Bitcoin. Then you had Ethereum. Then you started moving on to other stuff. I don't have the exact kind of sequence of it, but it was things like automated market makers. It was stable coins. Now it's been NFTs, and there's a whole bunch of stuff. And I think data is one of the next things to pop, because there's about 30 projects working on data in collaboration, privacy preserving compute, persistent storage, things like Ocean, data unions, DAOs, this type of thing. I think we're on the cusp.
Nice. And I was looking into the business model, and I've read through the white papers as well. So I love the concept of the providers, the consumers, and the marketplaces. Like, of course, the providers can mint the data tokens. The consumers can actually purchase the data tokens. And the beautiful part, which I'm really gung-ho about, is the marketplace, which connects the providers and the consumers and actually facilitate these transactions. So with this new launch of yours, like on the version 4, which is like a massive shift from the version 3, what are your thoughts where this particular ecosystem will shift towards? Because this is a massive inclusion into the crypto / data economy. And we all are token holders of Ocean Protocol as well. So we are very curious with this on the V4 launch, where it is going towards.
Since we started talking about Ocean, we've been conceiving and building. We've been learning a lot. And this last re-architecture of Ocean V3 into V4 till now is something we've been all looking for. Everybody's been looking forward to it, and the team's been working very hard for that. I think since starting in January, February, I've had a lot more conversations with enterprises, small startups, people who are interested in Web3. And we've learned a lot about what their needs are and how V4 can meet it. So what I'm really looking for, and what I've been seeing, is that the trend is to get the engagement. It's important to state that Ocean V4, the Ocean Marketplace is just kind of a front end to demonstrate some of the capabilities of the smart contracts. But there's a lot of capability in smart contracts which aren't exposed in the Ocean V4 market. And the reason why is just because of, it's a hard UX problem to solve. And I don't think that we're necessarily going to be able to solve all the different problems, because the way we've architected it is you have the smart contracts, and then you have things like OceanPy, OceanJS. These are Python, JavaScript kind of connectors, middleware. And then the Ocean Market uses these things to create kind of our reference marketplace. And what I want and what I see is that people are going to be building on top of OceanPy and OceanJS their own websites or their own apps to flush out many, many more types of use cases. And so that's what I would see, is because if people focus only on the ocean market, they're missing out on the multitudes of other use cases that we haven't covered. We cover a very narrow use case on ocean market just to show people how it works. And we're very heartened to see other people starting to take the components that we've built and then build their own marketplace, because I think that that's going to give us a much richer, a much more native, and a much more broad range of use cases that can be covered by the smart contracts, because that capability is already there and it's not exposed.
I think one thing that is really, a little bit sticky is the concept of data on cloud, on chain, and how data is getting transferred, processed, and a lot of other slicing and dicing is done on data. So that really drives to the question about the data privacy, like whether it is individuals like you or me or enterprises, small and medium scale, startups, etc. Everyone, they could be distributed. They are currently having, HQs and teams in different geographies of the world as well. So there are a lot of government laws like, GDPR in Europe, the, data laws that are also, encapsulating the entire meat or the package of it. So how do you try to address this question that will be often asked to you in multiple places, the data privacy, the data, protection, and those areas?
It's important to repeat that Ocean was built on the principles that people who originate the data should own that data. And if there is any financialization or monetization, they should definitely get a cut. That's number one core principle of Ocean. People need to own their data in a new economy, because artificial intelligence, robotics, and automation are going to take away a lot of the standard stuff and even some of the white collar stuff that much of the world is training up to be skilled at. So data is one thing where you get passive income by just living. And I think that everything we do accedes to this principle. So when we talk about that in relation to Ocean, we had some really hard decisions, but they were the right decisions. And that was that data is never on chain. You have metadata, which is things like a hash of an identifier for that data set or an encrypted URL, this type of thing. That's on the blockchain, which is fine, because that's not, you can't identify where it comes from, what it's for, all that sort of stuff. And the data, the services, all that stuff lives somewhere else. That could be AWS, but then you're on AWS, but it could be on-premise, or it could be in one of the new emerging Web3 systems like Filecoin, Arweave, any of these other privacy-preserving kind of architectures and such like that. And I'm excited to see more and more of these capabilities migrate into Web3, because I think that that will give individuals and consumers the most control as well as transparency about what's happening to their data, what's happening in terms of the computation and the services they're buying, as well as the transparency to see and audit all of that in real time and, in the long term. So that's kind of how I'm seeing it with privacy. I think that we are on the leading edge, and I think that we accede to the values of the European Union, the California, and the rest of the world. It's a moral guiding that we have. There's no law that we're actually following per se, like GDPR and the California privacy law. We're just saying this is what the 8 billion humans on Earth probably deserve.
Yeah, and you're right on that. Like the Web2 companies or the mega enterprises that we know about, whether the Googles or the Facebooks of the world, they have been monetizing a lot of consumer or user data. And obviously the customers or the users have not got the value out of it, right? So in the Web3, what you're saying is that this is going to change and there will be a lot of people getting or deriving value out of the data that they are planning to trade, with consent. So that's an interesting trend as well. Would love to touch upon the monetization angle as well. You mentioned that a lot of startups or enterprises or a lot of other bodies could actually monetize the data that they are willing to trade. Could you explain that a little bit?
So this is the topic that I've been having for the last 2 or 3 weeks, and I've been working on my ideas. I'll come up with a blog eventually. Monetization is probably the hardest topic, because now we have the tools. Like with V4, we have all the tools available to orchestrate and allow for publish and consume with a price. Now that's the question, is monetization. There's the main question is, what's a fair price and how do you price this stuff? That's it. There's a tough, and my answer is, it's coming to this. We have fixed price, which is, you know, the price that you want to sell it. It's one size fits all, whether it's a hedge fund or a university researcher, you want the data, you pay for it. Simple. Dynamic price. That's what's built into Ocean V4. That is using data tokens and stuff. And that's based on some sort of community curation based on staking, et cetera. That's a model. The problem with that is, instead of one price, one size fits all, it is a dynamic price, which kind of, it goes towards an equilibrium, which isn't necessarily what we want. And let me explain what that means. Dynamic price is useful for an initial pricing of data to get an indicator. But if it exceeds some sort of threshold, you start destroying demand for that data because it's too high. And I think that it's definitely a useful tool. And I think there are use cases where it's going to be useful. But I also have been speaking with others, and there's a couple other ways to do this. One could be, I had two conversations yesterday where the people said, I want exclusive access to this data. Exclusive. So the only way to do exclusive access is an auction. So we need somebody to build some auction mechanism for data with the low latency for traders. I want this data. I want to be the only one who holds this data, at least for a period of time. Could be a day. That could be good enough, but then you auction that. Another thing could be something related to API calls or usage. So let's say there's a data with 200 columns, and then you say, okay, 1 to 5 columns cost you this. That's good for a researcher. 5 to 20 columns cost this. This is kind of like a mid-size use case. And then all columns for a hedge fund to take a look at, that's something else. And there's other pricing models that we're looking at. There could be a royalty pricing model. So for instance, this data, it actually has value based on context. And what I mean by that is, if you're a researcher, you're willing to pay $100 for this data. If you are a hedge fund, you might be willing to pay $10,000 for this data. It's the context of the algorithm that's being run on top of the data. So what if, instead of the data costing anything, what you do is you say, if you use this data and it makes up a proportion of your analytics, I get a 30% royalty on the proportion that I contribute. That's much more fair, because then the data is monetized, but it has essentially a floating price, but relative to its use case and the value it provides. For me, that's the most sophisticated model that makes sense. And we don't have a front end to kind of deal with that, because that's a very sticky thing. That you can see where this applies. This applies in something like music rights. It applies in movies and such like that, right? You know, the star actor always gets 10 million and the walk-on gets $500. Well, you could argue about that kind of key, but that is also essentially the relative contribution of somebody. And I think that this use case makes sense in a lot of different areas. And it could make sense in algorithms, because if you look at data, an algorithm might be trained by 20 different data sets. And each data set has a relative difference in terms of how much they improve the algorithm. So if one data set improves the algorithm 50%, in the early stages, that might actually be equivalent to something that improves it 0.3% in the later stages. It's just that you found this first data set first. And so there are multiple models of pricing data that are now unlocked by Ocean. I'm excited about that, but we have a lot of work to do. And talking about how to price data is one of the big things to help people understand, oh yeah, there are tools. We need to figure out the pricing, but that's part of the joy, because as soon as one of these hits, or all of these for their specific use cases, it's going to be really fun.
I really got that part, actually. To be honest, usually how do you calculate a fair price of anything, whether it is data or anything, right? You have the demand and the supply. You come to an equilibrium, and then we see how many folks are actually ready to pay for that. There's a in SaaS world, we have different models as well, which one of them is a funny model, which is like the revenue-based pricing. So they actually talk about what if, how much money the end user or the consumer actually makes from that, you know, data intake. That really, you know, defines the price for that consumption of the data, which is a very unique play. I mean, you know, like you rightly said, if a hedge fund manager accesses the same data, he or she could make more money as opposed to another professional, right? So that's a very complex problem to solve. There will be a lot of iterations, I hope so.
Yeah, and this is what we're going to ask the community to do. So anybody who is experts in, as we move forward in this data journey, we're going to need different sets of experts. At the very beginning, we need community folks and technical folks who understand, A, to talk about the vision, but then also to build towards the vision. Now we're going towards some of the DeFi stuff, which is, okay, how do you mix and match some of these components? We need some people who do governance, who understand how you do data governance, as well as data unions, more infrastructure. And then we're getting into pricing specialty, marketing, distribution. So as we mature as a community and an ecosystem, we need different skill sets to add to the mix.
You're right on that. And I'm pretty sure Ocean DAO community will be a major foundation into all those experiments. But I would love to touch upon one thing that you rightly mentioned in your conversation about AWS, right? So the Google Clouds of the world or the Amazon Web Services of the world, they are hosting millions of SaaS applications and they're actually, accelerating the SaaS ecosystem per se, right? I've been talking to some of the best SaaS founders, venture capitalists, as well as operators in this ecosystem. And somehow my personal opinion after, swimming in the ocean ecosystem is that, there's a very strong touch point of Ocean Protocol with all these SaaS companies, right? I mean, eventually they have a data stack, they have all these APIs and eventually they're like terabytes of data that get exchanged. And sooner or later, when all these Web2 companies will try to, get into Web3, they would like to touch with the Ocean Protocol. And I just would love to know your opinion or, two cents on that.
Good. You're taking all my blog ideas, but it's perfect because then anybody who watches this video is going to have an understanding of my blogs that are going to come out. So SaaS and Ocean. I think that Ocean allows for kind of a global mixing and matching of different business logic. And what I mean by that is Ocean is nothing more than orchestration. And SaaS is nothing more than orchestration, except with SaaS, you have a one database with multiple tables and stuff like that, that one person controls. And how many times have you used a client server tool, a program that you have on your computer, and then move the data into a SaaS platform, and then move that data back into a cloud platform or something like that? What that means is that you've essentially said, in my world, in my conceptual model, I need this data, this business logic done in my computer because that's where the tool is. Then I do it in the SaaS because that's the model and the tool. And then I move it somewhere else because that's where another tool is. But in your mind, conceptually, it's just one database. It's one data supply chain. It's one flow of business logic. Ocean handles that. What I can see in the future is that people publish their business logic on Ocean. And so let's say you develop a library of 10,000 different ideas, whether it's like finding date time from the Microsoft Excel when you get the format there, and then you convert it to date time or date only or whatever, month only. So you have like this library of business logic and that's all on Ocean. Well, it'll take time, but it's not a big conceptual leap to say that let's move Salesforce, port that logic onto Ocean. Because you have the data in Ocean, it's published on Ocean. So then you just apply the business logic. Then you apply SAP, Oracle. You apply all the different types of business logic on top of Ocean, and each of these components become their own monetization module. So let's say within Salesforce, there's 400 business operations that are encapsulated in the SaaS platform. If you were to refactor all that logic in on top of Ocean, that logic could be applied to not just Salesforce type functionality, but it could be applied to anybody who needs that functionality. And so that's why Ocean is an orchestration layer also. And every single SaaS tool can then be disintegrated, disintermediated, and its logic then refactored onto Ocean over time. And then that will lead to mixing and matching of different ideas. And what you're going to see is you might have somebody owning a module and monetizing that, but then somebody else bundling 20 different logic pieces to create one microservice. And then somebody bundling 20 of these micro pieces to create with 400 pieces of individual logic to create another Salesforce that competes with Salesforce.
Yeah.
Are you getting me?
Yeah, absolutely. And what I'm actually excited about is that there's a lot of strong overlap between this Web2 SaaS community members who are really working on cutting edge technologies, whether it is machine learning, artificial intelligence, federated learning, et cetera, and who are trying to learn the Web3 ecosystem as well. So the community members eventually will have a little bit of osmosis and sneak into the Ocean Protocol community as well, is my hunch.
I hope so. And it's on my list to write some of these blogs, these ideas, just to put them down on paper and then to share that. And then hopefully the community takes it and runs with it. And we see some proposals in the Ocean DAO.
Yeah, absolutely. So I love the SaaS ecosystem as well, and I've been following the ecosystem for a good amount of time. All the amazing players who are, whether they are unicorns or not, they're still looking into the emerging technologies. And eventually, in the next 2 to 3 years, many of these SaaS players, amazing founders, will touch the Web3 ecosystem via some of these protocols. And because Ocean is embedded within the data economy, right? This could be the sweet spot as well.
I hope so, and I think that it's I'm more than excited about the future.
Excellent. And Bruce, I was taking some of the questions from the community members as well. One of them asked me that, what are your opinion about the data market shifting when the OEM manufacturers, like let's say Apple, Google, who are really taking stringent steps to protect the user's privacy?
I guess my impression of this is the more that you can attribute a data set to its component contributors, us individuals. So I don't know how many customers Apple has, like 3 or 4 billion at this stage. The more that they can attribute the relative contribution of each of those individuals into some sort of kind of data union, for lack of a better term, and then start marketing and selling it in an ethical way, the better it is, because I think that that transparency will allow them to give back something to those individual users.
Yeah, I think somewhere there was an article that was talking that whenever a particular user tries to use an Apple phone, an Apple iPad, or whatever, they are already giving away their consent that, hey, your data is some way being used in the backend, right? So knowingly, unknowingly. So the data may or may not be monetized in the backend. Sometimes the users do not get the value out of it. But as in 2022, a lot of public announcements have been made where everyone is trying to create their own silo and protect the data. And the Web3 ecosystem is really blowing up as well. So I was just curious, like, where this trend is heading towards.
I think every single company that has a large set of user data that has typically used it for advertising or selling advertising, and it's been very intransparent, needs to move to a data union model. It's the only ethical way where people are not going to feel like their data has been misused. It's intransparent in terms of the usage, how it's being used, all that sort of stuff. And I think that that's also going to make it so that advertising is better because people are going to opt in to saying, yes, I don't mind being advertised to. I just wanted to know about how it's being used and who's using it. So, for instance, political ads, don't want it. I'm building a house. I want to see furniture stuff. I want to see home interior stuff. So, yeah, give my data out for that stuff, but only for the next 3 months because then it'll be done. This type of thing. If we can get to that level of granularity where somebody has immediate control to give consent and take away consent for the topic area they're interested in, and they get compensated for it, so they get paid to watch an ad or something like that. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's commerce is how the world kind of develops itself. So we need more commerce. We just need to do it ethically rather than the Web2 model of unethical sharing of data.
Sure. I think another question was that community plays a very integral role in Web3 ecosystem, right? Whether it is all the DAOs that we have been talking about, or the millions of amazing conversations that are happening in Discord servers across multiple chains, etc. So what's your viewpoint, or do you have a unique insight around community building per se in the Web3 space?
I think it's a fundamental shift, obviously, from Web 1 to Web 2, because Web 1, Web 2 is top down. The leaders that be decide the tone and the tempo, the talking points. And with Web 3, you need to have a radical shift to a different way of thinking, in that there's the way that I talk about it internally is reasonable. You need to get an hypothesis, and then you need to create an experiment where there's reasonable amounts of risks, reasonable amounts of costs, and then you see what the results are. And I think that applies to the entire community, where we say, okay, let's deploy this amount of resources and see what the community comes up with. We're not going to put half of our treasury on any one idea until it's been tried, tested, and true and rolled out. And I think that that's a great way to grow community organically. I think that that organic method works because it sets a stronger foundation for community members to grow, to develop, to understand the ecosystem, and also to find their place. Because as a community member, you also want to get something back. You not only is it the vision that pulls you and compels you also need to find ways to pay for your rent, your living, And so I think that growing organically allows people to find this, and it's also the most optimum way. We want Ocean to grow into kind of the de facto glue that ties the Web3 economy together. And we're patient enough to see that happen over time. We don't need to have a big blow up like what's been happening with UST right now.
So true.
I'm not slagging them for anything. I mean, they're experimenting, but they went really big. And now it's almost a systemic risk for the community, the overall global community. And it's going to bring a lot of heat from regulators, potentially, who are going to say Web3 is bad for those who don't understand Web3. And so I am very comfortable with Ocean growing organically. We can grow fast, but it should be as in a manner that brings out the most of people, brings out all the ideas. We're not going to be in the way of that in any way. We're going to help support that and deploy resources where there's energy in the community to move it forward. And I think that that hopefully encapsulates the philosophy of Web3, where we are servants to the community. This is our baby. We want it to succeed, but we also never need to be at the forefront. But as right now, let's be obvious, like, I mean, we are seeing some of the earliest trends. And so we're sharing that with the community in a hope that we distribute as much information as possible so that community members can take that and run with it.
Yeah, those are beautiful lines. I think in the discords of Luna as well, I mean, it's like people are getting gutted actually. So at some point it was like $2.5 or $3 as well trading, and people were really getting really scared off. And even the CEO of the company made a tweet post just like a couple of hours back explaining the logic of it and explaining a lot of things as well. So I think communication really plays out a very important role in terms of community engagement as well. So that's a nice thought. My last few questions would be when a lot of communities are actually, you know, moving to the Web3 layer, the community engineering dynamics, the node network economics totally changes. Something that I learned in my OnDeck DAO fellowship is that the traditional way of community management that we used to do in our Web2 ecosystem, let's say we have a SaaS community, if you have a creator community, right? There is not a direct correlation with the Web3 communities because, like you said, it is bottoms up. But the node enrichment is very important in Web3. Meaning, let's say if there are like 10,000 or 10,000 nodes within the community, every node has to be equally important or valued, or, you know, the engagement metrics has to be strong so that the community density of the Web3 ecosystem really increases. Because if you have a lot of weaker nodes, then surprisingly, you know, the value out of that Web3 community is not at par as expected, is something that I've learned.
Good insights. Very good insights. I hadn't thought about it in that manner, but I think it conceptually makes sense. The way that I would then rephrase if what you told me is that there are multiple nodes in a Web3 ecosystem, and the goal is to do two things. Number one is to grow those nodes so that you get to the edge of the ideas, and at the edge is where you get the innovation. But then also somewhere in that that landscape of nodes, you need to have a couple strong ones and more strong ones over time, where they be areas where ideas congregate and thrive, and then they spread back out into the network.
Absolutely.
That's how I'm understanding it. And I agree. I would agree with you on that one. And a lot of this is at this stage personality dependent as well. Folks like yourself setting up a podcast, other folks who are driving the discussion in Discord. And we support all of that.
Thanks a lot, Bruce. So coming to the lighter side of it, would love to know about your worldview around, you know, you'd be reading a lot of books, novels, you know, white papers, blog posts, etc. Could you pick one or two book or blog posts that really inspired you in your journey, or that you really remember it very well and you really refer to at times as well?
I mean, I do a lot of reading. I mean, anytime that I'm not doing anything, I'm reading, whether typically it's blogs or ideas and stuff like that. And one book that I think could be interesting, it's not mentioned often, it's called Lonely Ideas. And it talks about innovation, particularly in Russia, how in Russia, there have been a lot of world-changing technologies developed and very few commercialized. In fact, none of them commercialized. And the author questions why. Why is it in Russia that ideas get formed but then die? Whereas in other countries, ideas have a much better chance of surviving. And it has to do with an openness to innovation and infrastructure and laws around protecting intellectual property. It has a lot to do with culture. And I think that the broader interest area for anybody who isn't in Russia and doesn't really care about Russia is How do you relate to Web3 as a country, as a nation, as a regulator, as a user? Do you see it as a potential opportunity? Are you willing to accept some of the risks that come with innovation, like what happened with USDT or UST in the last few days? And if you are open while having, you know, basic safeguards, but not onerous, then innovation does happen. And if you have too many regulations and too many cultural factors that push down the innovation, then that innovation leaves. I think that's a good lesson for everybody. And the book that really shows an extreme part of the spectrum is Russia. It's called Lonely Ideas. It's available at MIT Press. And I think it's relatively hard to find, but I also don't hear about it very often. But it's a lesson that I take when I frame discussions with regulators, governments, and anybody who is saying, you know, Web3 is bad. It's for gamblers. It's all this, you know, NFTs are worthless. DAOs, I mean, we already have governance systems, all these things where naysayers and people who are overly skeptical and haven't opened their minds, I think about the book Lonely Ideas.
Wow, that is amazing. I think books really shape people's worldview. And, you know, what inspiration you take from some of the books really, you know, impacts your decision-making process at times. The second one would be, is there a person or is there any leader that you really look up to or that you have been inspired in the past? Or you could pick two or three people that the convergence of ideas coming from these two or three people would be an interesting mix?
I mean, I shouldn't name Elon Musk because I think everybody names him. I try to model the best from each person. And there's a ton of folks out there, everybody from Naval to Balaji, Mark Andreessen, Ben Horowitz, in terms of leading companies. Like, there's so much knowledge out there. And all I would say is there's not one person, but rather there are groups of people who are thinking different. And it's find the people who have really cool insights. Yeah, and then just try to learn from them. There's so many resources out there, particularly on Twitter. If you look for the right stuff, and you don't get bogged down with all the clickbait stuff. The world is so amazing. I'm so heartened to see that anybody on Earth now with an internet connection has the ability to have like an MIT level education if they choose to.
Awesome. So amazing conversation, Bruce. I absolutely loved your thoughts as well. And the book recommendation was really great. You know, usually people give a lot of traditional book recommendations that you can easily find on Amazon, etc. But deep thinkers really go an extra length to actually find some nuggets of valuable information from remote sources as well. So thank you for sharing that. And before we close out, any feedback, any thoughts or any hot take for the community or ocean community in general, would love to hear a few notes.
Anybody in the community who's trying to push it forward, either on the community side or technology or governance side, thank you very much. We're nothing without the community. And let's keep going. Let's make experiments. Let's take some risks and move the community forward organically and in the way that it should.
Thank you so much for listening in. If you like the episode, feel free to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcasting platform and connect with us on the socials. Buckminster Fuller rightly said, "You never change things by fighting the existing reality. To change something, build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete." Have a great day.